This is URN Sport.
Welcome to the Tuesday Sports Show.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the URN Sport on this Tuesday evening.
We will be discussing over the next hour all the sports news from the past week and previewing what's to come over the next 7 days.
Is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the URN Tuesday Sports Show. I'm your host Alex, and today I'm going to be joined by Jack, Ollie and Callum, and we're going to be discussing some of the big sports news which isn't football. Pretty much that's the stick of this show. What we're going to be looking at today, starting off with a bit of UFC 217 recap. Big weekend, saw a lot of big results, so we'll be getting onto that in a minute. Also going to be doing a bit of a rugby league general update and some general rugby league news, as well as a bit of rugby union. Rafa Nadal withdrawing from the Paris Masters, and England winning in their Ashes warm-up, and just a bit of a prelude to what's going to be happening over there. So we'll start with the UFC, I believe. Callum, what happened? Do you want to give me a quick summary?
So going from bottom to top with the main card, you had the overweight, shall we say, former world weight champion, who was the last person who faced George St. Pierre, who was in the main event. He lost quite easily. Then you had former world weight challenger Stephen Thompson beat Jorge Masvidal. You had the first upset of the night, where you had Rose Namajunas knock out the strawweight champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who had in her last defense tied Ronda Rousey for the most. Then you had the seemingly new rising star of the UFC, Cody Garbrandt, getting knocked out by TJ Dillashaw, and then finally George St. Pierre, returning from 4 years away in a different weight class, choked Michael Bisping unconscious after repeatedly punching him in his one good eye.
Yeah, I mean, you got to appreciate, though, we were talking briefly before, the spirit of Bisping. I mean, he just refused to tap, and at that point, I mean, everyone knew it was over, the commentators knew it was over, and he just refused to tap. I mean, that does show, like, the spirit of a warrior.
There is spirit to that, as well, with that one in particular. He was out so quickly, he wouldn't have had much time to choke. So it's another thing from when, for example, when Holly Holm lost the belt to Misha Tate, it took her a while to go out. So that's also impressive as well, that it takes so long, at no point he tempted to tap.
It's the Rugby League World Cup on at the moment, and I do have a roundup of the second round action. The first match of the round, it was Australia versus France. Australia putting France to the sword with a 52-6 victory, with back row Wade Graham becoming the first player in 17 years to score 4 tries in a World Cup match. However, the highlight was French fullback Marc Kirala scoring a 90-plus metre try off a very, very poorly placed kick. Now, 52-6 sounds bad, but given that only 2 years ago England beat France 84-4, the French had definitely come a long way, and to get to lose by that much against this Australian outfit is very impressive. New Zealand versus Scotland, and the Kiwis proved that while they might not be able to do it on a cold, wet Friday night in Workington, which is where the two teams drew in last year's Four Nations, they can turn it on a hot Saturday in Christchurch, putting on an absolute clinic, scoring 14 tries to defeat the Bravehearts 74-6, with Sean Johnson becoming the leading point scorer in Kiwis history, passing Matthew Ridge's mark of 168 points. In the aftermath, Scotland captain Danny Brough, as well as props Sam Brooks and Johnny Walker, were sent home after being deemed too drunk to board the flight to Darwin in preparation for their next game. The third game of the round was Tonga versus Samoa, which shook Waikato Stadium, with the Sippy Tau and the Siva Tau, the respective war dances, being performed against one another simultaneously, which, seriously, if you haven't watched it, go and find the video, because it's amazing. Real hairs on the back of your neck stuff. Tonga ran out the victors, 32-18, thanks to, in part to a Michael Jennings double. The last game on Saturday was England against Lebanon. Wayne Bennett's men prevailed 29-10, despite really quite a poor game, to be honest. lacking a lot of cohesion in the side. The game was a bit overshadowed when Lebanon captain Robbie Farah complained of having been bitten by England winger Jermaine McGilvray, who, for some people, has been England's best player of the tournament so far. If he's found guilty, McGilvray could miss up to 12 weeks, rendering his World Cup campaign over. The first tight game of the tournament opened Sunday's proceedings with Papua New Guinea beating Ireland 14 points to 6 in Port Moresby, a 77th-minute very, very opportunist try to Watson Boas, ensuring the Kummels will make it to the knockout stages for the first time since the year 2000. Italy then pummeled the USA 46 points to 9, the first shutout of the tournament, despite losing starting halfback Jack Johns in the game against Ireland the week before and having start usual fullback James Tedesco in the number 6 jersey. Didn't seem to faze the new Sydney Roosters custodian though, as he nabbed a double in the absolute routing. Finally, Fiji versus Wales. In all the hype that surrounded the Kiwi and Aussie defectors to Tonga, some of the really high profile forwards defecting to the Matemaa before the tournament started, people seem to have kind of forgotten about Fiji, with players like Jared Hayne and Akwili Iwate and the NRL's top try scorer for the last two seasons in a row, Suliasi Vunivalu. You do so at your own risk. They ran out 72 points to 6 victors over a very, very poor looking Welsh side in Townsville.
One thing I'd like to sort of talk about really quickly is Australia. I mean, France, I mean, they fought well. They're never going to really expect to beat Australia, especially not Australia like they are playing at the minute. Australia beat England 18-4.
Yeah, that was a relatively close game. That was only a one intercept try right at the end that was sort of blew that out a little bit.
Yeah, but do you think they can be stopped? I mean, there's two games, they look strong,
don't they?
This
is the thing. At the moment, they're basically the best in the world in every position, to be honest. Like, Billy Slater at fullback, got Kronk, and whoever is going to go up alongside him in the halves, probably Michael Morgan. Cameron Smith is the best player in the world right now at hooker. New Zealand did look the goods against Scotland. I'm not sure if it was Scotland looking very, very poor or New Zealand looking very, very good in the absolute sort of destruction of Scotland in that game. That sort of gave us hope that there might be a decent looking final. And Tonga look interesting, but I just don't think Australia can be stopped at the moment unless there's a crash that injures Billy Slater and Cameron Smith. It's not going to happen, really. Yes, three players were not allowed on the flight to Darwin, including the captain, Danny Brough, Sam Brooks and Johnny Walker. And can we just take a moment to appreciate the fact that someone called Johnny Walker got too drunk to board a flight?
It's always sad to hear stories like that. I mean, these players are professionals. They know there's millions of people watching them, potentially very easily influenced children.
Yeah, it is a great shame that these people are, like, they've been chosen to represent their country. Like, Danny Brough has been, he was overlooked for England for a while, and then when the time came that he actually got a call up, he turned them down to go and play for Scotland instead. And like, he is the sort of heart and soul of that team. When they drew 18-all with New Zealand in Workington last year, he was absolutely pivotal to what they were doing. And to then be their captain and behave in such a way is just, it's a bit naff, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, Ollie. Some. I'll play devil's advocate for a minute here. I mean, they're rugby players. They're not teachers. They're just having a bit of a laugh. I mean, after a very disappointing result.
Exactly.
Do you think it's all being blown out of proportion slightly?
I wouldn't say it's been blown out of proportion, but one thing I will say is I don't think you can blame them for drowning their sorrows when you look at the two results they've had so far. You can't blame them in that sense. But
the thing I've heard is that like they were all having a drink at the airport, and then those three players they all went, right, we're going to stop now because we're going to go board a flight. The three that have now been sent packing didn't, basically.
Yeah, well, what I've seen is, I think, out of the three, two of them appear to be relatively inexperienced Scotland internationals. I don't think they've got many caps.
But Walker Danny Brough is the surprising one, being the captain
and everything like that. He's the one who should be setting
he's the most
an example,
cap player,
isn't it?
Like, he should know better. And yeah, all right, Walker and Brooks might not be necessarily the brightest buttons in the tin at this point, but they should still know better than to do that when you've been called up.
I mean, listen, they've been sent home. Hopefully it will sort of serve as a warning to other players, like, you can't just get away with this sort of thing. We will have to see. What's been happening in the pre-Ashes for England, where they played the Western Australia 11?
England have kicked off their campaign down under by playing a West Australian 11. It was a relatively young team they came up against. I think the average age of the players from the West Australian 11 was only 22 years of age. But England appeared to have done all right. It was a 2-day match. England scored 349 for 6 before bowling West Australia out for 342. It was a pleasing to see a few of the newest England call-ups in James Vince and Dawid Malan, both scoring pretty respectable scores. Vince batted at number 3 and scored 82, and Dawid Malan retired 56 not out. Probably the most worrying thing to see is England's bowling performance. James Anderson took 4 for 27 in 13 overs, which is pleasing to see. It's nice to see him doing well, in the sense that historically James Anderson seems to have struggled down under. But in terms of England's other bowlers, Stuart Broad really struggled. He only took 1 for 64 in his 13 overs. Chris Wokes, England's other main bowler, took no wickets whatsoever.
I mean, yeah, Callum, do you think, how are they going to remedy the
bowling? It was a tough pitch to bowl on, which is why it's sort of hard to feel too down about the lacklustre performance. But it's just, the most important thing for the bowlers in particular is just getting used to bowling in those sorts of conditions, because it's nothing at all like an English summer. But Tom Curran's a good addition to the squad because he's a decent batsman, so that helps, because you could put him in if Wokes is having a poor series or at number 9 or something like that. And he's a good batsman, perfectly solid bowler, good professional. He won't get into any sort of trouble about not being able to board any planes. And
no, it's surprising to see, though, because I think the selectors came out and said before they picked the squad that they weren't planning on picking anybody who hadn't played Test match cricket for England, yet they've come out and selected both Craig Overton and Tom Curran now. It's very surprising not to see someone like Mark Wood, who's possibly England's quickest bowler and on these flat pitches could have perhaps had the most success.
I would just like to briefly talk about Ben Stokes. Do you think his absence is going to really impact that?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, I think.
Because at this point, it does seem clear like he will be absent, because it was a question for a bit. But
I can't see him. It's so controversial.
At this point, it's too late at this point for him to actually get there, be integrated,
no.
All that.
The thing is, although the public perception of Stokes might have changed in the sense that people don't see him as quite as guilty as before after the two gay men came out and defended him, but that doesn't excuse from the fact that he did assault someone. I mean, I've seen the video, I don't know about you guys, but he probably assaults this guy, and so I mean, I can't see him being available, and I think that's going to be an absolutely huge absence for England.
So now I think we'll move on to our next topic, which is tennis
finals that are coming up in a couple of weeks' time, which is probably after the 4 major tournaments, the next biggest tournament in terms of tennis, and it's going to be interesting to see whether he's going to be ready for that, because a lot of tennis's other big names like Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic, Stanislas Wawrinka, they're all absent from this tournament, and if Nadal doesn't make it either, then it's going to be disappointing for spectators, I think, not seeing some of the sport's biggest names there.
Yeah, it's the question of whether he's hurt or whether he's injured. If he's hurt, then it'll be something, because he'll be back for that tournament and it'll all be fine. But if he's injured, then that could be slightly worrying. Or if he's just protecting the number one ranking.
Kenyan marathon champion Jemima Sumgong has been suspended for 4 years for doping. Not the first time this happened. She was actually banned in 2012 for taking a banned substance. Came back after a suspension, won the London Marathon in 2016 and claimed gold in Rio of the same year, and was the first Kenyan woman to take this title. And she's been banned again, essentially, for the next 4 years. She's won, between 2011 and 2016, she was one of more than 40 Kenyan track and field athletes to fail doping tests. I mean, it's getting absurd. It's really sad to see, isn't it, Callum?
Yeah, I mean, also, the other thing with this is, at this point, with how much it's been used by people like Lance Armstrong and all these cyclists, you've got to be pretty... You can't be that smart to take EPO, because the tests for it are so refined at this point that they're going to catch you. So it's a pretty bad idea, but it's obviously had an effect on her performance, because she won the London Marathon and the gold medal last year, so it obviously worked, which is the key thing, which is, I guess, why she took it.
We've spoken about this time and time again. I mean, we saw Joanna Blair, the British female javelin thrower, get banned a few weeks ago, I believe, for doping. well, not officially banned yet, but she's suspended pending investigation. I mean, how can we stop this? I mean, what's the next step? We've tried everything. It just doesn't seem to be ringing through.
I know. I think that's the thing, Alex. I mean, is there any way of stopping it? I mean, there's so many cases of people doping nowadays, and the fact of the matter is that there's probably so many more out there that haven't been caught yet. And I know Callum was saying that I think this substance is at EPO. People that have been taking that, I mean, nowadays they probably are going to be caught. But in terms of other banned substances, whether or not we catch these people is unknown. And it's very worrying to think that there's probably a lot of champions, Olympic winners, world championship winners out there that may or may not have been doing so illegally, and we might never know.
This is URN Sport.